Hello and welcome to your Deep Dive podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hello.
And Dave.
Sup, dudes.
Tori has a very full schedule this month, and I think she said she'll only be able to join us maybe once, potentially twice this month. So we're going to have a Tori-free month. What'd
September
you say,
Dave? At the time of, I was saying it's September at the time of recording, and she's a back-to-school Brarian.
Yes.
Missing the best stuff. It's a shame.
So why don't we go ahead and start with good thing. Dave, I think you had yours on deck, as it were.
I don't think that's really his good thing.
Yeah, my good thing is Dogfish Head Worldwide Stout. Was a beer that I drank last night. It was $10 for the bottle, and the bottle label boasts that it is a very dark beer brewed with a ridiculous amount of barley, and it was really delicious, and it was worth it. I wouldn't drink it all the time because it's $10, but I would say it's the best bottled beer that I've ever had.
Nice. And Craig?
So I recently got my beta invitation to Magic the Gathering Arena. Pretty good. I think it's what I've been looking for in a Magic game. I've played a number of different implementations in the past. And so the desire I have, I used to play this unofficial, and I think Dave played it as well. Yeah, he did, because he made a stupid squirrel deck or something. And it happened. It was called Apprentice, which was essentially a tool that gave you all the cards. It had you upload your card, your deck list. So it had access to the cards. It was just like a text interface almost. And you could make whatever deck you wanted. And it was fun, because you could experiment with different things. You could try to make it legal. Did you just look up the list, or just, do what Dave did and make a weird deck that wins every single time?
I made a deck centered around Mirror, which it was the most illegal as poop deck ever. First of all, Mirror is an unglued card, so it's pretty much banned across the board. The deck consisted of 4 black low tie and a handful of mirrors, 2 or 3 or something.
And basically then, 12 the Force of Wills, and
no, not even. It was,
it's like 9 cards or something.
It was an 8-card deck. It was 8 cards. And which is also really illegal to have an 8-card deck. But the idea was that I would be able to play Mirror on turn 1, and it comes into play tapped. So you turn it up, play it, use it on turn 2, and what Mirror does is it basically, you switch seats with your opponent. So then he would draw out, he would deck out on his next turn. It's probably 8 card deck.
So, right. You can make anything.
Okay, the squirrel deck, though, was legit, and that was an actual legal combo with 2 cards, Earthcraft and Squirrel Nest. Squirrel Nest gives your land the ability to have to bring a squirrel token into play. And Earthcraft is a global enchantment that lets you tap a creature. And since the enchantment is tapping the creature, it doesn't take Summoning Sickness into play. It might in modern rules, but back in the day it didn't. So you could keep tapping your new squirrel tokens to untap the land with Earthcraft and then build infinity squirrels. And if you have a coat of arms, then they are infinity power and infinity toughness. Well, really, infinity plus 1 power and infinity plus 1.
But they're tapped, so you've got a turn there where somebody can
exactly.
Come in and wreck shop.
Yes.
It builds up, though. Anyway, so, yeah. Point is, you can make fun decks. It was fun to experiment. But, all the implementations of Magic's were, you get a limited deck, and you have sideboard cards that you can mix in. That's it. There's no real customization. All the Duels of the Planeswalker games and stuff like that. And there was a little bit of it in the early PC Magic games, where you were given cards and you could sort of make a deck. I think that was the case, but even still, It's just like I was looking for something like I want all of this, the current sets, so I can go experiment, get the cards, make my own decks. And you could totally do that in Arena. Of course, you have to earn the cards, but the game is pretty generous right now. I'm not sure if they're going to keep it that way. With how easy it is to get gold and participate in drafts to get cards and get free packs and stuff like that. So far it's pretty good. I think it's what I've been looking for. I'm going to keep playing it. I do recommend, Dave, that you sign up for the beta. Although they might be going into open beta soon, so it won't even matter.
I was actually watching an old Pro Jared video where he plays like a 90s DOS Magic the Gathering game.
Yeah.
That looked really good.
Dude, that was so fun in the past, though. I had a lot of fun playing those.
I never played the game, but it looked really cool in the video.
I played way, way back a PlayStation 1 Magic the Gathering game. I don't even remember what it was actually called. Like, it was an official, you know, Wizards of the Coast product, but, like, it was janky as heck. Like, it wasn't well made at all. Yeah.
Nice.
But it existed, and I played it, and I remember very little from it. Like the best, biggest, most awesome creature available was, like, a Crawworm, which is, like, a 6-4. I think it had Trample, maybe. Like, yeah, that doesn't stand up to current Magic. But Arena's fun. I'm having a blast with Arena also.
Yep.
So my good thing this week is the Magic Mike series of films. There are two. The first one has a plot. It's a pretty good movie. Just, like, overall, good, solid film. But I feel like after it was made, there were a group of people who hadn't seen it and assumed that it didn't have a plot and was literally just connected scenes of sexy dudes dancing. And then another subset of people who were like, yeah, I'd watch that. And so they made the second one.
So on IMDb, it has a rating of 6. But Rotten Tomatoes gives it 80%.
Is that the critical or is that the audience?
I'm going to have to actually pull it up. I believe it's...
Because I could see critics actually enjoying
this. It's the critic, whereas audience is 60%. The critic rating is 80%.
Okay. Well, anyway, the first one is like a legitimately like good film with a plot, and it's great. There are also scenes of sexy dudes dancing, because that is, like, the core concept. The second one, there's no plot. They didn't bother. They didn't need to. And it's just super fun. Alright, so that's a good thing. Dave, you wanna tell us about the chapters today?
Okay. I thought it would be fun just to read my notes verbatim.
Oh, God.
So, I'll start with chapter 13, and I wrote in italics, because it was in the italics part, Terrace Min Reshek. And then I wrote, Kelsier and Renaud don't want Vin and Ellen getting attached. Ellen prob's not misting. Vin trails Kelsier to Luthadel. Kelsier going to spy on Credigshaw. Vin distrust / wants to help. ATM gives future vision. Double ATM is weird. Okay, so we'll go back to these bullet points and kind of flesh them out a little.
No, you don't have to. I mean, it's pretty clear to me.
It's basically how Tori does it, only she uses complete sentences.
Dave fail English. That's impossible.
What is this, chapter 13? All right. So yeah, the italics section, if I am correct, and it seems more obvious as time passes that the italics sections are from the perspective of Lord Ruler, whether or not they're point, can't tell yet, because some of them they're like, oh, I need to fight this deepness. Some of them are like, I'm trying to unite the world, and guys, so Terrace Min Reshek was one of the first Terrace Min to kind of speak out against the Lord Ruler's, if this is my interpretation of the vague italics text, that this Terrace Min was kind of the first one to denounce the Lord Ruler's, you know, right to unite the world or rule the world or whatever. And it's, you're kind of starting to see how the Lord Ruler wants to wipe out the airbenders. I mean, the terrorist men.
Everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked.
Mm-hmm.
No, future good thing right there.
Boy. Only the deepness can control all 12 metals. Or, 11. Or 12. We don't know. There could be more. There's this mysterious 11th metal. Okay, so Kelsier and Renault, they don't want to create a scandal. So they don't want a romance to blossom between Ben and Ellen. It would not suit their needs very well. And I've posed before that Vin may be the one to betray the group later on, and this might start to be a seed of motivation for her. I don't know. I kind of thought maybe her brother would get involved too, somehow, like, get her to betray the resistance. Okay, and then I said, Ellen, prob's not missing. And that's, they couldn't actually remember if this was back in Renault's mansion or later on in Luthadel, so I just wrote it in here. But Kelsier tells a story about how they were on another raid and Ellen's was there and he almost died and he didn't use any powers to save himself. So they suspect that he's not a Misting. I don't really want to take that at face value. That's just his perspective. He could either have been hiding it or later acquired allomantic powers, like Kelsier himself. So then Kelsier goes off to tells Vin to go to bed, and he disappears, and then Vin trails Kelsier and finds that he's got all these bronze bars, like, sticking in the ground between Renault Mansion and Luthadel to, you know, basically make a Mistborn path so that he can very quickly, even quicker than a horse and buggy or chariot, get from one place to the other. So she follows him, chit-chatting with him on a rooftop, and, you know, Kelsier's like, yo, I'm going to go to Lord Ruler's house and try to find some answers, and it's going to be super dangerous, so go to the clubhouse and wait for me there, and you're not going to wait for me, so I may as well just take you with me. Vin doesn't really... She sort of doesn't trust Kelsier still, slash sort of is starting to care about him and wants to be there and help. But then also, you know, she wants the experience. She wants to actually use her allomancy in a real-life situations. Let's get that in, and we'll see how that turns out for her. And Kelsier also introduces her to a 9th metal. This is outside of the main 8 called Atium, and this is the really, really valuable one that they dig up from the slave mines. And so what it does is it allows the allomancer that burns Atium to see briefly into the future just by a couple seconds. So if I'm about to punch you, but you're burning Atium, then you can see my fist coming a second before it does, and you can dodge out of the way, or you can see which way I'm going to dodge. So it's, and then so that you can, you know, strike your opponent. So it gives you all the advantages. It also enhances your mind so that you're not overwhelmed by all this new information as well. However, if two combatants are burning Atium, then basically their ability to see into the future changes the future, and you see all kinds of crazy echoes of people, you know, of the other guy that's burning Atium. You see him like a billion or 100 or 10, I don't know. You can see a bunch of different possible futures. Just two? No.
That's it.
More than two. So, yeah. So, that chapter ends on Kelsier introducing Atium to Vin and giving her a little bit of a supply before their raid. Okay, any questions about chapter 13?
How many like ATM shadows?
Or 100 or 10?
How many ATM shadows?
I need like a Dave quote bot in my channel.
Alright.
I hope you record all these, Mike.
I mean, I've been writing them down in the Discord.
Oh, I thought you meant, you know, record the episode.
No, because eventually when I get a quote bot, those are going in.
I don't know what I did, but fine. Alright, chapter 14. I'm just looking at these. My notes are a little more chaotic than they
were. Wait, are you going to read the notes for chapter 14?
We're about to read, if we're done with chapter 13, I guess we don't get into predictions till we're done the triad, so.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Word for word, this is what I wrote down that I wanted to talk about for chapter 14. Black Rock Spire, Candelabrum, Vin kills four dudes, Kelsier still racist, Barefoot, three steel inquisitors, lol, Kel forces Vin to run, slashed in the side with Ack. She escapes Inquisitor via decoy. Or does she? Wait, I have no idea. okay, so I just wrote down Black Rock Spire because Ezra approaching Credit Shaw, which is, you know, the Lord Ruler's turf, it kind of reminded me of the building in Warcraft Orcs and Humans. It's like the final boss of a human campaign. Black Rock Spire, guys.
Yeah. Okay. But made of spiky metal.
Yeah. I wrote down candelabrum because I had never heard that word before, but it made sense. It's the singular form of candelabra. That was like kind of cool. And I just to point out that Sanderson doesn't use a ton of big words, but he throws them in here and there, and usually there's good context for them, and I don't have to look them up. Like, if you read Dickens, you'll have to look up a word every other page, but a lot of that's because Dickens is an older language.
So I want to interrupt.
Yeah.
You said...
Black Rock Spire.
Black Rocks. Never mind. Keep going.
Okay.
Okay.
I actually have something here.
Okay.
Just real quick on Sanderson's use of big words. Mistborn is full of one specific word that gets used repeatedly that basically like doesn't ever get used anywhere else ever, but it happens a lot in this book, and that word is maladroitly.
Hmm.
And
well, I know what that word means. It just means like clumsily, right?
Right. But yeah, like it. I have never seen it before. I've never seen it outside of this, and I didn't notice that it got used so often until I started listening to the audiobook and had to, you know, hear Michael Kramer pronounce it. And it gets used a lot, and it bothers me a little bit. Like Brandon got like a word of the day calendar and is like, that's a really good word. I'm going to use that a bunch. Anyway, continue.
Okay. Vin kills four dudes. So she had never actually killed anyone before. And, you know, cause she's usually the one hiding. If she was on a raid with her brother, he would do the killing, or she was, her gang was more about, deception than it was about raiding and killing. So, when she first killed the dudes, I was like, well, wait a second. Has she ever killed anyone before? That's kind of a big deal. And, you know, she, and this chapter is written from Vin's perspective, she kind of makes a comment about it, but she's still in the heat of battle and can't really reflect on it. So I think that it's appropriate to just acknowledge it and move on because there's too much going on to really get distracted by it. And, you know, perhaps at some point after the raid, she'll kind of reflect on it and be a little remorseful about it. So that was, thought that was handled well. And, you know, Kelsier is still racist. He sees that she's a little distracted by having just killed four dudes, and he's like, nope, don't matter. They're not, they help the Lord Ruler. They deserve to die. So, Yeah.
Still racist.
Still racist.
They're nobles. They're not real people.
It's more classist than racist, but...
Well, it's not... Yeah. Yes. Aren't they all... The class is based on the race, though.
Like, the terrorist men are a different race.
True. And this was kind of weird. This kind of stuck out to me. It's page 265 in my copy. It mentions that Kelsier was barefoot. Yeah, Kelsier walked forward bare feet, clawing on smooth black marble. And this is when he's in, like, the secret chamber that Lord Ruler goes to on Thursdays.
On Thursdays for bowling night.
It's his day off. I mean, that's, where else would you go?
Well, we don't... It's so mysterious, though, that Kelsier has to, you know, risk his and Vin's lives to find out what's there. I don't really know if they mentioned before about him being barefoot, if that has something to do with allomancy, or if it has something to do with him being a ninja and sneaking around. It doesn't... I don't know.
It's quieter to use barefoot than it is to probably use the shoes that he has access to.
It actually was mentioned before, in one of the earlier chapters, when he's about to, I think, go and raid Keep Venture, he slips his shoes off and then jumps off the roof.
Okay.
So, like, that's just a normal thing that Kelsier does, is when he's out mistborning, he's barefoot.
I don't know if maybe it was also, like, a tin-burning thing, like, they could maybe tremor sense if they have their shoes off, if they're burning tin.
He actually complains about that the... Like, the paving stones are super cold on his bare feet when he's burning tin.
Yeah. For the record, I feel like it's a bad idea. But I don't know what kind of shoes he has access to normally. It just feels... Like, especially if you're going to be burning tin. If you're going to be burning tin, you step on a pebble, it's going to hurt a lot more than normal.
But yeah, you're also exactly burning pewter.
I guess. Maybe it offsets it. I still don't think it's a good idea. Compared to shoes. Nice... Good pair of shoes.
Quiet shoes.
Right.
I didn't notice that he was barefoot previously. Anyway. Okay, so they get into this, like, chamber, this secret chamber, not associated with any other secret chamber by any other fantasy authors. There are three Steel Inquisitors there, either waiting to ambush them, or they just happen to guard this place. What'd you say, Craig?
I said lol.
Yeah, lol. Three Steel Inquisitors, lol. This sucks for them, so... You know, we have another really cool...
Sucks for them. This is the end of the book. good game.
Yeah, they should have saved before going into Blackrock Spire, I think.
Let's make a save point first. Let's try this out. Oh, it didn't work.
Maybe Lord Ruler was the first, like, really smart boss that... actually didn't put a save point in his lair. That would have been that'd be pretty good. You know, of all the treasures and you know, upgrades and things that last bosses put in their final dungeons, they've got stuff and they need somewhere to put it. Okay, but why give your good guys a save point?
What if you're also giving your bad guys a save point?
I never see the bad guys come back after I kill them. Except in...
Really, I have. Leave the room, you come back, they're back!
I guess that's a good point. The day points, the bad guys day points too. So Kelsier's like, Vin, GTFO up on the heck out of here, and she's kind of like paralyzed with fear, and he throws a coin pouch at her and pushes her away. So she's like, oh yeah, I guess I'd better run.
Hold on, Mike is furiously typing out the vid GTFO the heck up on out of here.
Yep.
Such a mess. So good.
I shouldn't read this during the episode. Alright, I'm going to minimize. I'm going to go to a different channel.
Oh, it's okay, I'll just read it out loud again.
Okay. So yeah, one of the three Steel Inquisitors follows Vin, and she burns the ATM, and there are other guards that know, she can kind of get through. Okay, this ATM is pretty cool. I can get through all these guards. But, of course, the Inquisitor himself also has ATM, so he burns it, and she doesn't really know. She's not good at the ATM versus ATM battle. I guess that would be like a 16-ium. So he, you know, gets her in the side with a big axe, and she uses this decoy ploy where she throws the coin purse in one direction and leaps in another direction, which she actually came up with herself in one of her training sessions against Kelsier, and Kelsier later used it to try to trick her earlier this night while she was trailing him to Luthadel. But, you know, so at first it seems like the Steel Inquisitor goes away and, you know, falls for the ruse, and then someone catches up with her, and at first she thinks it's the Steel Inquisitor, and she's kind of like, it says that she sees like the spikes in the eyes, but it might just be because, you know, she's dying and hallucinating. So we're not really, we're left kind of unsure at the end of chapter 14 who exactly it is that picked her up. She wasn't, you know, we don't know if it's the Inquisitor or Kelsier or someone else. Okay. All right, any questions about chapter 14?
How many exclamation marks and question marks did you use when you wrote out barefoot?
3 question marks.
Okay.
Just no exclamation.
So no interrobangs?
Nope.
Which is the coolest name for punctuation.
Good. What do you call it if the exclamation point is first?
That's
bang interrobang. Intero?
No.
It's still interrobang if the exclamation point's
first. No, we just call boring.
We call that, that's a chess notation.
Well, technically, the interrobang symbol is an exclamation point over a question mark. So you just combine both of them. Doesn't really matter which one's first.
Yeah. So, in chess, that would be like a novelty. It's like, we've never seen this before, but it seems interesting. Let's see where this goes. The person, you know, notating the chess match.
Yeah. Rather than question mark, which is like, why?
Yeah. I saw and if it's like, it's just like a really huge blunder that it's 2 question marks.
Alright, chapter 15.
Alright, chapter 15. Kelsier returns to the clubhouse. Sazed shows up with Vin. Gives Vin pewter and treats her wounds. WTF is Metal Mind! Sazed and Clenny book from Credit Shaw. Or Sazed has Clenny book from Credit Shaw. Oh, I forgot that name. LR? Oh, Lord Ruler has survived decapitation and being burned to death. Will Vin live?
I like how you didn't even know who LR was. Like, wait, why did I write this?
Emperor Meterstick.
Okay, so... Ver von Protractor. Why does everything have von in it? I think of Baron von Blarg from Bubble Bobble. Baron, what the heck's that guy's name?
I think of Baron von Blabs about his only weakness from Atomic Robo.
Alright, chapter 15.
How about Bosch von Rosenberg of Dalmasca?
Or von Kaiser from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Man, it bugged me so much that they say Marquis in that game. Even though it is a correct pronunciation, I just like to hear Marquis.
Okay, so Kelsier is the... get it from his perspective, and it starts with him making it back from his little excursion to Blackrock Spire, and he returns to the clubhouse, and we don't see Vin yet, but then we see Vin. Sazed shows up with Vin. She's unconscious, but they give her some pewter, and she's, you know, she's mistborn-y enough that she can unconsciously burn the pewter to stay alive while she's got this big gash on her side. And then Sazed also, since he's a metal mind, whatever that means, he also knows all this stuff about medical techniques, and he's able to stitch up her sides and get her to bed and stuff like that. So this is a new word that we hear twice in this chapter. I guess it's some other form of superpower that the Terrasmen have access to, so it allows them to maybe pass on information to each other Or retain information and or live longer. Actually, that's what. Alright, so here's a theory time. Here's Dave theory. I think that metal mind is the ability to S on knowledge instantly. It's basically like a Vulcan mind meld. It's like instantly send information, pass it along to the next person.
That is an interesting theory.
Okay. So this is just Sanderson just throws this word out here. It's obviously just meant to be a RAFO word. You know, hey, here's something cool that you want to learn about. Why don't you keep reading?
you got to give, little pebbles. Crumbs. Some crumbs.
Pebbles?
Little bread pebbles.
Fruity pebbles. Drop them on the ground.
Pebbles. All right. So, Cezed showed up with not just Vin, but also a book, which I assume is the book that Vin actually picked up in the secret chamber, or, in a chamber near the secret chamber. She was looking for some way to dodge. So the Steel Inquisitor that was chasing her had these kind of like little shurikens, or they're like little sharp metal triangles. And these guys are like, they get hurt, but they don't get hurt. Like, they're basically just all the time computer enhanced or something. He just has this handful of sharp metal triangles and he's bleeding. He's like, I don't care. I'm going to throw these at you. And so she has to find something made of not metal so that he can use it as a shield. And she finds what I guess to be basically just this big Bible. She was in kind of like a little chapel area. So I assume that this is the same book that Cezed picked up and brought back to the clubhouse. And they said that it's a Klenni book, Klenni, which is the region that Lord Ruler was originally from way back before he became Lord Ruler. So might contain some kind of valuable information on how to undo Lord Ruler's invulnerability. And then we hear some anecdotes about how he had his head chopped off and he kind of laughed it off with his head on the ground. It's like, ah, ha, ha. He's also been burned to death and he survived that somehow. So, this guy actually has some legitimate staying power. But does Vin? Vin is unconscious and put to bed, and we reach the end of part 3.
Yep, you weren't allowed to look ahead, so who knows?
Yeah. End of part 2.
Oh, end of part 2. Part 3 will begin next.
One quick thing I want to point out is there is an error.
In my note?
No, in the book.
Oh.
So, when Vin starts burning pewter, Kelsier checks it with his bronze. In the clubhouse, where there's supposed to be copper burning all the time. And clubs is right there.
Oh.
So he shouldn't have been able to do that.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's...
He sold clubs to stop for a second. They've been in this situation enough times that clubs knows, all right, I got to stop for just a second so that we can see.
And potentially draw an Inquisitor down on them when they just dealt with 3 of them? Nah.
It's just for a second.
Nah, I'm pretty sure this one was just an oopsie on Brandon's part.
Or maybe they have a perimeter around the building of copper burners.
So anyway, anything else before we go into spoiler territory and get the Dave Free Zone?
Hold on a second.
Okay.
No, never mind.
Okay.
Trying to think if you can sense things because you're within the copper cloud?
Nope.
Is that explicitly said somewhere?
Yes.
It's not like the cone of silence, Craig.
That's actually the whole point.
Although that works the opposite.
That's the whole point of the copper clouds and
the clubhouse. I knew from outside. I was curious from inside the copper cloud, but yeah, I guess so. It's just always a cloud.
Yeah.
Didn't remember because I haven't, read it recently.
You can't detect allomantic pulses from within, or that originate within a copper cloud.
It's a minor thing. It's not really a big deal. But it's actually a good catch that you notice that Because I never noticed that in my rereads in the past. That he sort of screwed up like that.
Yeah. Just a little oopsie. Alright, Dave, you got anything before we boot you?
Oh, no, we have a lot of questions for him.
Okay, start asking.
You can ask me, you know what happens.
Well, it sounded like you had some theories, because we're like, I'll wait for theory time, so let's hear some theories.
I theorize that Vin will survive.
Okay.
That is a bold prediction, Cotton.
Well, like, did you have any other thoughts about, like, maybe what the book leads to, or, I don't know, Inquisitors?
Okay, well, sorry.
You mentioned your metal mind.
Yeah. We'll start with the book. I think that it's probably some sort of religious text, but it's also, you know, it's going to be important for historical information on kind of the origin of Lord Ruler, and that they're going to try to use that to figure out how to, you know, undo Lord Ruler's power. It might even have some information about the 11th medal in there.
Do you feel like you understand how ATM works?
Yes.
Okay.
You asked me that last night and didn't want me to answer. What have I not explained sufficiently about how ATM works?
No, I feel like you got it. I just wanted to circle back to that.
It should also be mentioned that it burns super duper fast. Been faster than pewter.
Yes. Like a bead. They don't really go into like what size it is, but significantly larger than like the flakes that they're drinking. Only lasts like a few seconds, maybe a minute. Anything else?
Craig, do you have wanted to ask me what I thought about Steel Inquisitors or anything particular about them?
No. I mean, if you have thoughts on them, go for it. I mean,
they're creepy.
They are creepy.
That's a good catch. They're creepy. Let me write
that
down.
So, like, they're hard to kill. Lord Ruler is apparently impossible to kill. What will our heroes do?
Rafo.
Tune in next week. Rafo. Steel Inquisitors are creepy.
Is that a quote?
Yep. Man, this is riveting stuff that I'm going to cut entirely.
I thought Dave had stuff for us, because it sounded like he did, and now he's like, I'm done.
Alright, so, bye, Dave.
Alright, good luck, have fun.
Alright, see you next week.
Okay.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
So, what do we got?
Got spoilers.
We have, maybe her brother would get involved too. So, yeah, he still thinks that Reen is going to show back up.
Yeah, I mean,
sort
he's
of.
Mentioned quite a bit because of Vin's, essentially, her history. So,
mm-hmm.
Sort of makes sense that he would focus on that, except he's wrong.
But yeah.
Also right.
Yeah. And then we have like a billion or 100 or 10.
Oh, we want to go over all the Dave quotes.
I'm just going through them because, well, that one was great.
Well, so ATM's really interesting.
Yes.
And when I like read that section or anytime there's some kind of battle involving ATM, it's like I picture, especially ATM versus ATM. That's the important part. Because just you burning ATM, it's like he mentioned, you sort of see this shadow of what's about to happen, and you can react to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ATM versus ATM where you see all of these possibilities splintering off from yourself, which is really cool, because it's you essentially see them doing something, and then you do something in response, and then it changes, and you get all of these possibilities, like a billion, or 100, or 10 different... Yeah, so, I mean, I'm trying to think what I would have seen that's like it. It's almost, to me, like something like The Matrix, where you have multiple different images of a person doing something, but that's not really accurate, because It's not like that in the Matrix. So, I don't know. I picture all these different possibilities and paths, and they splinter off, and it's really cool looking.
For, like, a visual of that, I think of, like, the end of Chronicles of Riddick.
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
So.
It's not great.
If you're not, you say you're not missing much. There you go.
So we have The Secret Chamber, not associated with any other Secret Chambers by any other author.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Sanderson doesn't really do the Harry Potter thing. Like, a lot of other authors have, you know, something that harkens back to Harry Potter in some way, but Sanderson doesn't really touch that at all.
Well, I mean, so there is a secret chamber, right? We don't know what's there. It's this big mystery throughout the course of the first book. Actually, technically through the course of the second book as well.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, but it's there. It's dropped. It's hinted that this exists. There's something here. So at least when he calls back to it late in book two, it can be like, whoa, it was right there under them the whole time. It's like so cool. But it is important because there's, Rashik's, like, stuff there. It's terrorist stuff, I think, mm-hmm. That's there.
It's a recreation of, like, his hut back in Terrace 1,000 years ago.
And that is a big clue.
Right.
It's just that we won't know it's a big clue until after Vin starts reading that book.
And then Vin needs to burn the 11th medal and be very confused and then finally figure it out almost too late. It's almost.
I forgot, is 11th gold or something?
No. The 11th metal is Malatium.
That's right. So I was trying to remember off the top of my head.
But it works like gold, just on another person.
Right. So I'm trying to remember there was external and internal. I knew what it does, I just didn't remember which alloy it was.
But Malatium isn't part of the 16.
No, it's not.
By Era 2, it doesn't exist anymore.
And that, I remember first hearing about that, I'm like, wait, ATM isn't part of the 16 and there's another? But it makes so much sense. So, like, initial me thought ATM made sense in terms of the temporal metals. I'm like, it seems like you have an external, you have an internal component. And it sort of made sense, but at the same time, what really is the 15th and 16th metals also, I think, makes sense. And I had to pull it up the list so I can actually refer to the correct things.
So, there's a bunch of metals in Era 2 that don't do anything now.
Oh, because it just slows down time and speeds up time.
Right.
Rather than, so the internal is that it reveals your past self or reveals your future self. And the problem with ATM is that it does reveals someone else's past self, reveals someone else's future self,
well,
which is a little weird how it works. Right.
Regular ATM reveals someone else's future actions.
Okay, sorry, not self, but actions. Whereas with the actual metals, cadmium, bendalloy, it slows down, it changes time.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than revealing actions. I don't know.
Which, Brandon actually just decided that there's no radiation issues just to keep Wayne from cooking himself every time he made a speed bubble.
That's good.
Just for simplicity's sake, no, just, it doesn't, we don't do that. It just doesn't.
So, I don't know. I feel like ATM does fit pretty well. ATM and, what did you say?
Malatium.
Yeah.
Except that the actual opposite for ATM is Electrum. Malatium then would be the opposite for gold.
Yes.
Except that that doesn't fit, like, the normal, you know, base metal and then alloy thing.
Oh, I see. Right.
And also, in Era 2, when you can't ever have more than one power without getting into hemallergy, you've got, you know, aluminum, duralumin, electrum are all useless. They don't do anything. Gold was already pretty useless. It doesn't do anything useful.
Okay, hold on. Let's go through. So you're talking about Allomancy.
Right.
And you don't think seeing someone's past self, well, seeing your past self and seeing your future self is that useful?
It's not. It's not in Era 1, it's not in Era 2. It might be later, like, Brandon may come up with a way to, like, make it useful, but...
I feel like Electrum could be useful. It reveals your future.
Electrum is anti-Atium.
Yes, that's how they use it.
That's all it does. It creates fake Atium shadows for anyone else looking at you who is burning Atium.
Burning Electrum will reveal possible futures of the Allomancer up to several seconds. Electrum's main usage is to be able to counter Atium, as you mentioned. The poor man's Atium.
Yeah. And it burns way slower than Atium, which made it very, very useful in, like, Book 3 when Vin and Ellen kept fighting Inquisitors that had Atium.
I feel like it still could be useful. It sort of has that use like Atium does, where you could see if you're about to get into a weird situation. Like, for example, let's pull out some D&D here.
Except that I don't think the person who burns it actually sees anything. like, I'm pretty sure the way it works is that it just reveals these fake Atium shadows to anyone watching you who themselves is burning Atium.
You don't think you see anything if you're not burning Atium?
I don't think the person who burns Electrum sees anything at all.
Burning Electrum is able to see who they may become in the future, depending on their choices. It says they can see it. I feel like it'd be weird if you can't see it.
I mean, it's pretty weird already.
Alright, well, let's assume you can see it. D&D, you're in a dungeon, and it's filled with traps. Boom, you can see yourself getting hit by a trap, so you know not to go that way. It has the ATM type. Except instead of seeing someone else's actions, you see your action and you know not what to do. Like, don't do that. I mean, we sort of see something. I thought we basically see it in what's that? Six of the Dusk. Yeah.
With that sort of thing.
The bird sees, like, here's all your deaths, and he's like, that's creepy, and I'm sort of used to it, but not really, and it's sort of that. That's what I see. Like, I feel, you know what? There might be a huge similarity between Electrum burning and that bird in Six of the Dust.
Maybe.
Something to think about when I reread that story.
Yeah, we'll have to see if, like, it actually gets used in future books.
So I feel like Electrum has some potential, and it's just that we haven't really seen it, especially with ATM being, like, non-existent.
Maybe our hero for Era 3 will be an Electrum burner, and we'll get to explore this.
Oh, man, that'd be cool. All right, I'm on board for that, although I doubt it, but we'll see.
I mean,
Gold, I can understand.
Our villain for Alloy of Law was a gold burner.
It's true. I mean, he
was a double gold.
Yeah.
The gold burning didn't actually do much.
It was the fact that he could compound it, so that way he's really freaking hard to kill.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, gold by itself, I could see, is really hard to use. Like, just as an allomantic power, like, you just see your past self. Big deal.
And you have to destroy a flake of gold. Like, that's money, my dude.
Well, is it money in Mistborn? Because metals mean something slightly different.
Oh, it's still money in Mistborn. Like, Miles actually talks about how part of why he went into crime was because gold is just so frickin' expensive.
Right. I just want to point out, it doesn't have quite the same value as it does here. Metals in general have a different value in Mistborn just because of their use.
True.
And the fact that you're burning it, which removes it. So they're probably even more expensive, actually, because of that.
Apparently, Bendeloy is also very expensive, which makes sense because it's, like, difficult to produce.
So what ones did you say? You said gold was useless, you mentioned Electrum.
Aluminum and Duralumin.
Okay, aluminum, which wipes your allomantic reserves, and of course, if you just burn aluminum,
nothing happens.
What does that give you?
Yeah, and Duralumin gives a huge burst to whatever other metals you're burning at the same time.
Yeah.
So if you can't burn any other metals, it doesn't do anything.
So I want to point out, that the Set are trying to make a new Mistborn. Like, that's their whole point of capturing these ladies of certain genetic diversity. Whoa. To try to create an actual Mistborn. So they will want someone.
What they might be trying to do instead of what Wax thinks is going on, is they might be trying to make a new Steel Inquisitor.
Oh, you think they're doing Hemallergy?
That makes more sense to me, and it's a much shorter timeline than, you know, trying to breed yourself a misting army in the hopes that you get a Mistborn 100 years later.
The problem is they know if you do too many spikes that Harmony will be able to do stuff. Because they're aware enough that one spike makes it hard for Harmony to do anything. So if they're trying to do Hemallergy, it sort of falls flat the moment you do two spikes. Because suddenly Harmony can do stuff.
Except the Trellish God Metal seems to muck things up there.
Well, there's a question mark there. Yeah. I don't know. I thought my interpretation is that they're trying to breed a Mistborn.
Well, that's Wax's theory.
Sure.
I just think Wax's theory is wrong. And, I mean, they may even still, like, be trying to make a new Steel Inquisitor, and, like, maybe they just don't realize that as soon as they put too many spikes in this thing, it becomes a finger puppet for Harmony.
I just want to point out that regardless of which path they do, there is a use for someone who can burn those metals that are useless, because either A, you have to spike them into someone so that way they have access to it, especially, at least, Dora Aluminum, just because of the enhancing, which is useful.
Yeah. But how do you find a Dura Lumen misting?
They have to burn it. I mean, it does nothing, but they can still burn it.
Right, but like, in the same way that, like, in Era 1, one person found out that he was an ATM misting before everything went kablooey,
yeah.
It's just, there's not really much opportunity to ever find out about that. Like,
sure. And I feel like it's hard for a lot of these things. If you're not aware, it's like, how do you check? Do you want to really ingest some of these things and just see if you can burn it?
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I mean, they have a genetic thing, and they're aware, like, my parents can do this, they're from this particular lineage, and they used to be able to have these powers, and I guess it's something like that.
I mean, it's not unreasonable for them to find a Duralumin misting. Like, one. Because, again, we have the example in Era 1 of, like, a ATM misting before the very end of the third book.
But that was on purpose.
Right. So, like, they could potentially find one.
So that's interesting. You actually bring up that point. There's that whole information where preservation is basically, like, the 16, everything's in 16. So it's like, 16th of the people are snapped, 16th of those people die, like that sort of thing.
Well, good.
But
they don't die, they get the extra bad sick.
Okay, yeah, sure. The point is that ATM is considered one of the 16. They become different mistings, don't they? Or is it just only ATM?
I think only ATM at that point. And I want to say that Harmony changed how it worked when he took over. Like, to remove ATM as being considered one of the 16, replace it with, you know, ATM and Malatium.
You think he just replaced it? Not that it always existed that way.
I don't know, man. The rules are weird. Because
I feel like these 16 always existed, whether the humans can make it or not. And then we have the two god medals of Lyrisium and ATM, which of course is based on the shards.
Right, and it's... the whole thing is weird.
It is.
And at some point, at least one shard holder changed the rules at least once. Probably a couple of times. So, like, we have rules... And then we have rules that have been changed, and yeah.
I feel like this is an intrinsic property of Allomancy and Ferrochemy. It's not that they're changing anything, it's just this is what happens. Especially with preservation being all about 16, there's 16 medals that do stuff. Like, he's all about the number 16, and just god medals are an extra thing that can be burned. I mean, well, people can burn Lyricium even though they can't, they don't have Allomancy. It's what gives someone Allomancy.
Right. Okay. In order for Atium to have Mistings, I feel like, and, like, fit this whole 16 thing, it has to take the place of one of the basic metals, which means that Preservation at some point changed the rules, or it was always considered a basic metal until Harmony changed the rules again.
Hmm.
Just rules got changed, things got screwed up.
I don't know. I don't like the idea that rules were just changed, especially with Preservation. Preservation would not change rules.
I mean, he changed the mists so that they snapped people.
That was all right. That was part of his plan from the beginning, though. And I don't.
But the mists weren't snapping people before.
I'm just trying to see if I can get any info on ATM.
Like, Ruin made it worse. He made the mists come during the day. He made the snapping way more violent so that it killed people. But, like, the mists didn't snap people before. And then they did starting in Book 2.
Okay. So, he does change minor things. But I still feel like changing the intrinsic rules of this magic system is something that goes against Preservation's intent.
And, yeah, I kind of agree with you, but we have some decent evidence that says it happened anyway.
Maybe. I'm not convinced the rules were changed.
Or
there could be something else going on here.
Consider this. What if Atium was always considered one of the core 16, despite being a god metal, and then when Harmony took over, he changed the rules so that ATM is no longer a thing.
But then how do we have Lyricium fall into that?
All I got's a shrug for you, man.
My personal belief is that the god metals are still separate, and they were always separate.
But then that screws up the 16 thing, then you have ATM listings as being, you know, 1/16 of the 1/16.
I mean, it could just be Preservation wanted the number 16, so that's just how it worked. It didn't really matter what mistings that they were becoming, in this case ATM mistings, just the fact that he wanted the number 16 propagated as that clue.
Well, that's still changing something.
Maybe. I'm just saying we could be reading too much into it.
That's possible. Maybe not. That's definitely possible, but I think that's actually what we're supposed to be doing, is reading too much into things.
Sure, that's our point here.
I think that's the job.
Dive podcast. It is. All right. Well, I think we don't need to keep going about this. We're going to talk about it more in Book 3 once we get up to it, and of course when ATM itself is used throughout the various books, because it's an interesting thing to burn, as I feel like all god metals would be, including Et metal. Whatever that may be.
Is that the Trell metal?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, I mean, it's possible that there are, like, interesting interactions between...
Actually, that's not the Trell metal. That is the Harmony metal.
Oh.
Metal is a kind of metal known to Southern Skadrians. It is also called Harmonium by Harmony.
Oh. Okay. Neat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there may be interesting interactions between, like, these... air quotes, useless mistings, and like other magic systems in the Cosmere.
Yeah.
Like, it's possible that being an aluminum misting is important if you're also, if you also have, you know, a few hundred breaths.
That
like,
is
and,
a good
and there's
point.
Some cool interaction there. Like, I don't know. We haven't seen it yet.
Right. That is a good point. Or if Yeah, so I do definitely want to see some interaction. I mean, okay, we have Vasher. He's chilling on Roshar. But he never... Actually, no. Bad example. Good example is Azure/Vavina.
Mm-hmm.
Because she actually does things. I think at one point you sort of see her cloak actually doing stuff.
She definitely does some awakening. I re-listened to those sections not too long ago. So she definitely does some awakening. I'm not convinced that she's not just using breaths she already had versus, like, harnessing Stormlight in some way.
Sure, that's fine. The point is that at least we can see a different system being used within, well, Roshar in this case.
Right.
So it's not like as soon as you go to a different planet, you can't do anything you could do before.
And then, however, aluminum has interesting interactions sort of across the Cosmere.
Right.
You can put up sheets of aluminum around a room, and you can use a span read, which the signal still gets out somehow, but you also don't send, what are they? There's like the Spren, and then the super fancy Parshendi. What? The Spren or the Unmade? No, those are special. I can't words. The Odium Spren will like spot it, and then they'll send
a Void Spren.
Void Spren, thank you. And then the dead Parshendi who come back and possess bodies. What are those ones called? They have a specific name.
I don't remember.
Okay, well, yeah, they come in and start wrecking shop, but the aluminum plates apparently keep the Void Spren from spotting it in the first place.
Yeah, somehow. It's just the aluminum in general that has that weird anti-investitor type use.
And then
which is actually interesting that they can even use it at all for burning.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, it seems so anti-investiture in general.
And I also wonder about, like, silver and how that interacts with things, because it's allomantically inert, which is weird. And then it does have, like, some place in investiture, at least on Threnody, where it destroys cognitive shadows and, like, keeps places safe from them. But, like, we don't really see silver interacting with anything at any point. And I feel like there might be something going on there, but I have no idea because we have no information on it.
I was going to point out that just what you were saying earlier about the use of aluminum, it's sort of why hemallergy is so scary, because we don't know what it will do to other investitures.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
That's scary. The unknown.
So, yeah. Fun times.
Sure.
Presumably we're going to get, like, a lot more information on these sorts of things in coming books.
I suspect we won't. I mean, we might see some usage of hemallergy, of course, in the last book of Era 2, just because it could be your theory is correct in that case. But yeah, more interaction is probably not going to happen for a while. Like, even Era 3 will just be, like, 1980s. Like mystery thriller type thing.
Yeah, I'm seeing this as thrillers. As things like, you know, Mistborn Era 4.
Yeah, we got a while.
Stormlight Part 2, like the second half of Stormlight. Man. I feel like there's going to be like Stormlight has already had like a ton of, you know, world hoppers showing up and being active.
I was so excited when I figured out it was Vavina like right away, and I'm like, holy crap! Like I had chills when Nightblood popped up at the end of Words of Radiance, and just to have Vavina there, and I knew it's Vavina. Like, I didn't recognize Vasher until I was, like, read it later on. I'm like, oh, okay, that's Vasher, but he doesn't do much. Whereas Vavina does a lot. I mean, she goes with them on their trip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, man. Just to see these characters, but I sort of want to know what happened between her and Vasher, because I thought they had that sort of, like, not quite romantic thing going on, but they were like hanging out.
Yeah, they went off into the sunset to go seek adventure.
What happened? And of course, somehow Vasher lost Nightblood.
Did he lose it or did he give it away?
Yep. And I think we'll find out in Warbreaker Part 2.
Yeah,
AKA Warbreaker 2, Nightblood.
Elantris 2 should have like a ton of Cosmere-y stuff going on because.
That's true, because they can actually go to the Cognitive Realm.
Yeah.
Maybe get some info on Irie, because it's long vowels.
Right. Maybe we'll have some, like, Surgebinders come visit Cell, now that there are Surgebinders again.
Would they have a reason to do that, though?
I don't know.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
There's some exciting stuff coming up.
There really
is. Which is why we're doing the podcast now.
By the time we release this, it might be out, the Skyward.
Oh, yeah? That's coming out soon.
Yeah, it's coming out soon, and, like, by the time we release this, the book might actually be out. I honestly, I don't know when this one's coming out, or I don't know when the book's coming out exactly. I could look it up, but whatever. That's exciting. It's not Cosmere, but it should be very fun. I'm super duper looking forward to it.
Apparently Brandon just posted something on his blog yesterday. Not about this. He's just talking about Fanex. He's attending a Salt Lake Comic Con, so it probably doesn't help anyone who's listening to this.
Not really. But, I mean, if you're coming here looking for, like, up-to-the-minute Brandon Sanderson news, then
well,
I don't know how to make you rethink your decision-making paradigm.
No, well, if they come to the actual Twitch, well, even still, we don't really.
Yeah, that's not really the point. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and end the recording, because we're over an hour, and I think we've kind of run out of steam here.
We talked a lot about ATM and Allomancy. It's what happens. Do we want to go over anything else Dave mentioned?
What else did he mention? We got...
Yeah, he talked about, you know, stuff, but
ATM
overall...
versus ATM, I guess that would be 16-ium. Nice. And then his bold prediction that Vin will survive. We'll see how that breaks down.
Let's see how that plays out.
Yeah, that our main character will survive two-thirds, or a third of the way through the book when she's been hurt. Just, man, that takes some guts to get behind a prediction that bold.
There is some interesting information there, though, is that she's unconsciously burning pewter when her body's in trouble. Like, sort of like reaching out, like this is a healing tool type thing. Because we had that discussion before, like, do you burn stuff in your sleep? And typically you don't burn stuff when you're sleeping.
Except that we're pretty sure she's been, like, unconsciously burning pewter basically her whole life.
Right, so she's used to it.
Right, to survive, you know, the various beatings that she's gone through. Yeah. To, you know, still be alive despite massive malnourishment, neglect, just all the stuff that should have killed her. Little tiny bits of pewter that she happened to pick up in her day-to-day managed to keep her from not dying. And then Steel Inquisitors are creepy.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Yeah. I can't wait to show some pictures of them to him.
What he didn't mention, I actually did want to bring this up. What he didn't mention is that at the end of chapter 14, Spook, who is acting as lookout, says that there's a big man in a robe, coming to the shop, and you're meant to think that it's an Inquisitor at that point, but then Sazed comes in.
Yeah.
Sazed, who is described as tall, but never big. Wonder if there's something there.
Oh, because he is bulky thanks to his copper mine, or not copper mine, his metal mine.
Yep.
That is a good point. Good catch.
So, and then I don't think Dave spotted it at all.
Yeah, he mentioned how it looked like maybe an Inquisitor was picking Vin up at the end of chapter 14, and like that's all he mentioned in his summary. But yeah, just the fact that you see Sazed and he's probably looks bulky at least until he drops Vin off.
Yep, because he's tapping strength, and as we know, that actually like physically changes him. It makes him it grows his muscles,
which is actually really interesting that Ferrochemy does that, whereas Allomancy, you don't usually see a physical change in someone.
Except, I guess, when you burn pewter after you've almost bled out, you get, like, a little flush to your cheeks.
Okay, sure. That's just because of blood, like, changes.
Yeah, I think it increases your blood production rate, which then would help significantly in, you know, the healing process. Pewter's interesting.
It is. Alright.
Alright, gonna call it.
Alright, sounds good.
Bye, Internet.
Bye, Internet.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast, or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.